How many just got a real thrill about Sabbath? I mean, about the lesson this week?
Oh, that was it. Never mind. Thought of the third thing.
Am I on the wrong lesson again?
No, you're on the right lesson. But I've got to say that we will find out today who the great theologian of us two are, because he won't remember to bring it up. But the lesson author quoted, guess what?
Yes. I wondered why you didn't take that.
Yeah, I was going to take quoted Bob Dylan. So now you know great theologians when you see it.
I thought of that all week. I thought, of all the ones...
I share everything.
Yeah. Of all the ones that I get and what you are going to get, I thought, how long have we been doing this? And this is the first time they've quoted Bob Dylan. But But when you look at the concept of law and gospel, what goes through your mind when you think that? Law and gospel. Just... Welcome. Did you bring him? Okay. When you look at that concept, do they seem like they even belong together? When you think of the word law, is the next word that you automatically think of is gospel? Or when you think of gospel, do you automatically think law? Now, what do you think it is that creates that kind of response? When you think of law on the highways, well, most of the time you feel pretty good about them unless you're in a hurry. But I don't see anybody running out embracing the 55-mile-an-hour speed limit sign. I don't see that kind of reaction. What is it about this concept with the law and the gospel that it seems like they just don't go together? Mixing water and oil. Why is that? What goes through your mind when you think of law? Is it something that warms your heart? Yes. Well,
no. As I said at this lesson this week, I thought of something. I need help with semantics to dance around it.
Okay.
We've always been taught, and we still are taught, that in the last days there will be little laws that you'll have to observe Sunday. Mm-hmm. The Sabbath is going to be a test, and it's going to separate the sheep from the goats. And this lesson I realized that's really not true, because the sheep from the goats are going to be separated by God.
Yes, okay.
So how do I answer that in my mind? I mean, because we've been taught this our whole life.
Yes.
That the Sabbath is going to be the defining thing at the end of time. But really the defining thing, according to this lesson, is God.
Yes. Leroy gave me a quote, I put it in there, about the man's role in all of this, in salvation. And it's so interesting that some people live religion. I know they don't say it this way, but they live religion as if the highest form of your dedication to Christ is that you're brainless. You have no brain. That is, you've got to find all of the steps, all of the regulations, and if you find those, you've got it made. And so why I say that is, I love the minds that are in this class, because they will put those things out and they begin to study it and begin to look at it, because it doesn't make sense. And especially, I'm going to focus on that at the latter part of the class today, about the role of the Sabbath and how we're supposed to be looking at that. The Sabbath being right in the heart of the Ten Commandments. And if we don't know what the problem is, we don't know what the solution is. That's why Blaine has to do so much work in trying to figure out the diagnosis. And then a lot of it is guesswork. Because a lot of them have similar symptoms, and what do? I try this, I try that. And so if we don't know what the problem, we don't know what the solution is. So let's look at it just a little bit. When God opens up this Bible, He says everything was perfect. Man was in harmony, in total agreement with God. They had one-on-one, face-to-face communion. That's how the Bible opens up. Well, how does it close? What do you see in Revelation? It's okay to talk. What do you see in Revelation?
God has come back and redeemed us. And the new heaven and earth, the perfection is back, is restored.
So you see a perfection again. And what do you see as far as a relationship with man and God?
We are face to face.
Face to face again. And then immediately, we see where the problem arose. Adam and Eve fell. And what happened to them? What would you say was the difference? Now, I don't want to get into this, but we were discussing this morning. Was there a plan in store? Had Adam said, no, I don't want that apple, or whatever it is. By the way, I heard this last week, people comparing the fruit of knowledge, good and evil, to an apple. And he said, you know, it's not the apple in the tree that matters, it's the pear that matters.
Was not me.
And it wasn't me either, I'm just reflecting. And so when we look at what happened, what actually happened with Adam and Eve? What are the first things that happened?
They hid.
Pardon?
They hid.
I couldn't hear.
They hid.
They hid. So they partook of this, and the first reaction that we notice is that they hid. And what did they hide from? The voice of God walking in the garden. Now, that was a brand new experience for them because every time the voice of God spoke, they ran toward. They enjoyed that fellowship. Now He speaks and they run and hide. Well, what happened to them? Did they just begin to be naughty? And they felt shame because they were naughty? What is the problem? Is it a condition problem or is it a behavior problem? What would you say? A condition? Anybody, how many vote for a condition problem? Okay, either a whole lot of uncommitted or how many believe it was a behavior problem? Okay, we're about divided, and about two-thirds of you are afraid to speak up. Or
a combination.
A combination. Okay, is that possible? And we're asking about the chicken and the egg, pardon?
Behavior happened because of something.
Oh, okay, okay. They felt guilt? Okay. Okay. If it is a behavior problem, what's the solution? So if behavior is the solution, what contribution do we make to our salvation? Pardon? Okay.
Serve, you know, God. That behavior makes the difference. Choosing.
Okay. God. Okay, but what about the behavior of choosing not to do sin?
I think sin is in us.
Oh, wait a minute now. You voted the other way. You're talking about a condition. Do you see the dilemma? If it is a behavior problem, the law then prescribes all the steps about how to behave. And if you follow that solution, does it lead to salvation? I'm sorry?
Under your premise, it should.
Absolutely. If it's a behavior problem and we get everybody to behave, but like Moses, who is trying to herd people like a herd of cats. You don't herd cats. So, it also reflects on the last day events. If we can get everybody to behave, and if we can get everybody to behave perfectly, and if we get everybody to keep the Sabbath perfectly, do you know where that started? Pardon? Yes. Yes. They said if we could, and it's written there, if we could get everybody to behave perfectly and keep seven perfect Sabbaths, God will come and redeem us. That ain't new, folks. So you better understand what the issue is. If it's a behavior problem, how much do you need Christ? How much do you need the power of God? How many threads do I weave into my garment, my robe of righteousness? What part do I have in sewing that or putting that garment together? Pardon?
All I have to do is put it on.
Yeah, isn't that something? I love Ernie's sermon on the prodigal son that he has named properly the good father. Amen. And in that story, he emphasizes there wasn't one thing, even a good speech, even a good confession, that warranted that robe, that warranted that ring, that warranted those sandals. It was returning to the Father. And who put the robe on? Okay. So, follow me now. When man was created, what was his spiritual condition when he was created? Perfect. Who made him that way? Oh, okay. If man then was perfect there and he's perfect in the end, who makes him that way? Then what happens with behavior? We have had a real struggle with this because I read a statement where Mrs. White was saying the law and the gospel are perfectly married. You cannot separate them. It's like a coin. One side heads, there's got to be another side to it. The other side is tails, it's the exact same coin. You can't separate them. Well, what happened around 1888? What did she say? We believe that there is the grace of Christ. We believe there is the law. And that it's still binding. In that time, remember, this is a new revelation. Because it already been changed in the New Testament. I mean, the Old Testament done away with, and the law had been changed and so on. So the Adventist coming out with this new concept. The law is still binding. So what ditch did we fall into then? Pardon?
Legalism.
Yeah, the legalism. She said, we have preached the law so much. What is that famous statement? That it's like the hills, dry as the hills of Gilboa. We preach the law, and we have forgotten about grace. We have forgotten about what it's about. If you have a behavior problem, then everybody must behave the same way, the perfect way. Pardon?
The Jews tried that when they came back to Israel.
Yes.
Separation.
Yes.
An example of what happened.
And so, what was Christ's statement to them for doing that? Can you remember some of the statements? What did he say? Yeah. Woe to you, you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, play actors. It wasn't just that they were doing opposite of what they were preaching, is that they were holding before the people all of these things that they had to do. Now, don't get me wrong. Behavior is going to be a major part of it. But behavior from a certain perspective, who gets the glory?
We have to be careful that we don't work on it. We focus on ourselves and our behavior rather than focus on God.
Yes. Yeah. Remember at that coronation scene, I can't get it out of my mind, that when we're there and we realize what has happened and how we got there, every symbol that we are a saint that we can take off, we do. The crown of life and throw it at His feet. Now, how do we get to that? The law and the gospel. There is a tremendous effort to try to peel away the law, throw it away, and emphasize nothing but the gospel, the grace of Jesus Christ. And we say, I don't need that law. I don't have to worry about it. It has nothing for me. That is, I'm a New Testament Christian and I believe in the grace of Christ. And folks, don't think that's not weaving its way into our own denomination. That there is no such thing as the doctrines, as standards, as the law. But it's how we see them. That when I look at the portrait of Christ and I see all of these various beliefs that we have, the end result of those beliefs is a beautiful portrait of what God is like. But if God says you were wrong and you've got to behave, then everything He does is to try to get us to the place to where we behave. Now, perfect in the beginning, perfect in the end, face-to-face contact, face-to-face contact. And we find immediately, as Ernie said, the very first thing that is obvious is that they ran and hid. But there is a step before that. Why did they run and hide? What reason did Adam give? I'm naked. Well, how did they know that?
The glory of God had gone away.
Something very dramatic had happened. We see Jesus in the glorified body on the Mount of Transfiguration. And when the disciples saw Him, what did they see? Jesus as God, but Jesus as man. When He was transfigured, they saw him in that beautiful robe of light, which is exactly what we will be. And so when you see that perfect beginning, that perfect ending, the moment that something happened, their rebellion resulted in them being totally naked. What did God do about it?
He clothed them.
Now, wait a minute. What does that mean? What did they do to have to get clothed?
He had to kill the man.
He made a substitution.
Oh, when Adam had to take whatever instrument there was and kill that lamb, it said the reaction in Adam was so bizarre. Number one, they'd never seen death. And he was the one that had to kill. But Adam was overwhelmed with joy because he found out, because of that lamb, I will be reconnected. Who provided the garment? Who provided the way? God. And what was the condition of Adam when he accepted that way and accepted what God had done? Careful now. What was the result of Adam accepting that garment? He was covered. The shame of his nakedness was covered. And who did that? The blood of the Lamb. Who would have ever thought? Who would have ever thought that the sins of man were taken away by the blood of a lamb? Who could imagine that? Look at the solution. One of the series that we give on the names of God is Yahweh. Yahweh, I am that I am. The blank check with unlimited resources. Instantly, when Adam fell, Yahweh rushed in, grabbed them by the hands, and rushed them to the east end of the Garden of Eden. And there He set up. What was there? There was an altar there. And what did that altar look like? Anybody remember? I've shared that here. This is your test. Yeah, and what was that sword? Okay, and there actually was no sword. So in the Hebrew, they have to give you pictures. And the only word they had for something that was reflective was a bright, shiny sword. And He said, there was something between those cherubim, those two. And what was it? A bright, shiny light. And the only way I could tell you what that was like was if you take a sword and you hang it up and you turn it like this, it catches a reflection of the sun and it just keeps going like that. And then where else did we get to see that? On the Ark of the Covenant. Where else did we see that? When Solomon dedicated the temple. And there was one other time that the temple was filled with glory. And the glory of God was in the temple. Anybody remember when that was? When Jesus walked into the temple to worship His Father. That was the glory of God. Was it bright? It was the character of Jesus Christ. It said the glory of the temple that they restored the other one with would be far greater than anything of what this other one had. And there was no bright light. He actually walked in and cleansed the temple. And it's so interesting to see what happened. When He turned over the money table, what happened?
They ran.
They ran. What did they run from? They ran from the glory of God. And what was that? Folks, they ran for the same reason that Adam and Eve ran. They stood in the presence of glory, of sinlessness. They stood in the presence of God. That's what they ran from. And by the way, who stayed in the temple? The children. And after they ran out of energy, the leaders came back and said, "What's this racket we hear in the temple?" And what was the racket? Singing praises to God. So folks, if you see that there is a condition problem, then there's only one that can change that condition. And when that condition changes, something happens to the behavior. Do you get the picture? Does behavior ever enter in? Oh, yes! Now, I have to confess something. Sometimes I get so mad at some of the things that are coming in the quarterly that I have to flip through and try to find something that I can teach on. But I know they're doing their very best. They're doing it by prayer and so on. And so I saw this lesson. I says, "Man alive, this is crummy. Why did they do that?" And then I studied the lesson further and I fell on my knees and I said, "God, please forgive me." Because there are some beautiful things in there that I have never seen before. Is incredible. Do you get the picture that if our problem is a condition problem, what happened to my heart? My heart, I am naturally born with, wants to run from God. And when I discover, and finally dawns upon me, I've got to get out of this world somehow. What's the answer? And the moment that I see my condition, I saw God rushing in instantly. He does that today. When you see your condition, folks, that is only part, but that is an important part about what the law does. How will I know that I'm a sinner but without the law? But if we stop there, we slip right back into a behavior thing. The law tells me only righteousness will inhabit the kingdom, and righteousness that looks like this. Well, who looks like that? The law is an exact replication of the character of God. Now it's starting to make sense to me why David says, "I meditate upon thy law day and night. I hunger for it. I thirst for it like a deer in a dry desert. When will I come before Him? I meditate on it day and night." I'll tell you, for the first part of my relationship with Christ, I did not understand that. I had no idea what it meant. I'm now beginning to grasp what that meant. That we are beholding the character of God. Now, I want to approach something that I've told you several times, but I want to approach it from a different perspective. When God says that you will follow me, what do we become?
Like Him.
Just like Him. Well, how does that happen? By beholding Him. Beholding what? The law? The law doesn't save me. But the law is a description of the character of God. And all of a sudden, I find that God is reproducing in me His character, which is what? We find ourselves, much of a surprise to us, that I find myself looking just like what the law says. I find myself with a different attitude about men. I find myself with a different attitude about someone else's possessions. I find myself with a different attitude about who I worship, how I worship, what I'm doing. Now, I want to talk about the crowning jewel of the law. The law is reproduced in me through Jesus Christ. The law is then a portrait of what I will become as I follow Him. He is the one who does it. He is the one who has put that robe about me, that robe of righteousness, which is the character of Christ. He is the one that does that. The law then becomes a description of a future condition that I will have as a result of beholding Him. God will perfectly reproduce in His children His character. Now, every army has at least a couple of flags. One for the country they serve. One perhaps for the branch of service they're in. One for perhaps the battalion they're in. And one for the company they're in. And they all have different insignias on them. And there is one where it says, Jesus is our banner. It's one of the names that we deal with. Jesus is our banner. Or another word for it is, Jesus is our ensign. Our flag. Well, the standard that God has placed in our heart is that when we get to know Him and we see His regeneration that He does in our heart, all of a sudden we find we want to spend more time with Him. All of a sudden we find that He says how to do that. That 1/7 of your time, He says, I want to have that devoted where I give you a day of vacation and devoted to us furthering our relationship. But you know what it stands for? When I understand the Sabbath correctly, when I respond to it correctly, the Sabbath becomes the ensign, the banner in my life that Jesus Christ is the one who regenerated me. There is no logical reason with any law, anything that we have, why there should be a Sabbath. There is no logical reason. It just sort of sticks out as a sore thumb in all of our reckoning. The English thought they would do away with it and say, 7-day week, baloney, we're going to have an 8-day week. The wheels came off of their army. They had to go back. I don't know what that was all about. Do you understand? The Sabbath is a sign that it is Jesus Christ that has regenerated me. It's not just keeping it from sunup to sunset, or sunset to sunup. That's not what it's about. That as I get to know Him, I want to spend more time with Him. And as I keep that, I then become a flag that everywhere I go, I become a flag proclaiming Jesus Christ is the one who regenerated my heart. He is my Redeemer. 6 days shalt thou labor and do all thy work, and on the seventh day. Why does He say? Because I am the Creator. I have a great battle thinking that somehow the Sabbath is going to be the sign of the last days. Yeah. But I see that the Sabbath will be one of the things that is highlighted that will be a characteristic of those people in the last days. But the reason that they keep it is that they realize that God is the one who has regenerated my heart. God is the one who is my Redeemer. And for some people, that's going to be a problem. The Sabbath stands in the heart of the law as the ensign that I belong to Him. And the devil will do anything he can to try to distract us. Have you ever noticed something? I saw this morning, and I may be wrong in this, but those who thought that they could change times and laws, do you notice what kind of religion they have to do in order to get God's approval? They have to work hard. They have to do a lot of things. They have to give a lot of money. But when God provides a solution that is the only solution that man can have, God rushed in and covered them with the robe of Christ's righteousness. God is the one who made Him perfect in the beginning. God is the one who made Him perfect the moment that He sinned. God is the one that makes us perfect in the end. When you see that it is a condition, you're going to approach everything from a different perspective. And you will notice that your behavior changes. You will notice that there is a reflection of the character of God within you, which is His sign. You're my child. I'm sorry?
I see that in Sunday keepers, too, people that I've known through my life. They certainly reflect God.
Oh, absolutely. I would never, never say anything about that. You know, if that is a sign, if just behavioral change is a sign, then we're looking at it from a different perspective. And I know that's not what you're saying. You're saying, I have run across a lot of people who don't keep the Sabbath who are absolutely beautiful people. And I totally agree. But I know a lot of people who came into Seventh-day Adventist Church that as they were growing, they looked pretty ugly. So is He growing me in the direction that I will keep the Sabbath right, or I will not covet, I will not steal, I will not do this, and I will not do that? I know all of us are on that process where He is taking us.
Like that. Why those nice people who keep Sunday, they're over there like Baptists, and they are not in our church? Maybe we should ask another question. How about is those nice, very good Baptists who's keeping Sunday come to this church and got disappointment and then run away and we kill them forever? Maybe our life, the way we're living now, the way we're doing now, is maybe worse that he's keeping over there, the Sunday keeping his church.
Yeah.
Maybe that's one of the reasons that God didn't bring him right now to this church or the other church. Doesn't matter which one.
Could we also say that could be the reason why we're losing 85-86% of our own children?
This is something different, something that we don't have it.
So if we see that what we're doing is that we're putting restrictions on our children and we're putting them in a prison, how are they going to respond?
They want to escape.
They don't want to stay there. But when we pass before them the glory of what God is like and the opportunities that we have with Him, what an incredible change will happen. The law and the gospel are one. The law is a perfect portrait of what God is like. The law is the product that happens in me as a result of knowing Him. He's the one who produces it. Jesus says, "Come unto me, and you shall have rest." What is that rest? It's a rest from me trying to do all I can to save myself. The Sabbath stands for He's the one that has regenerated me. He is the one that is doing this work in me. And when I keep the Sabbath, I don't try to prove to people what day it is or how wrong they are. I try to tell them how beautiful my Lord is and how gracious He is and respond the same way that Adam responded when he found out that he sinned and he was separated from God, and Yahweh rushed in instantly and provided the way back. And He's doing that today. Father in heaven, I thank You so much for the beauty of what that law describes. It describes You. And without knowing You, I see myself as a sinner and I run from You. But when I find out that also You never let me go, You pursue me with everything You can and You present to me the way back. And You begin working in me to will and to do of Your good pleasure. Everything that flows out of me, Father, any kind of action, any kind of obedience, anything that I do that is righteous, I thank You for working in me to will and to do of Your good pleasure. Thank you that I can come unto you and I can find that rest, that peace, that assurance that you are my God. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen.